What's going down, everybody? Cody Pasby with you instead of Doug. Doug is off with Mickey Mouse on the happiest place on earth right now. Doug, Dan, C-Rad, or Cody, Dan, and C-Rad. I don't know. I'm all over the place right now. Hi, everybody. It's The Hype. It's episode 198, getting off to a fabulous start. We're going to be talking about huge deals in the hobby. This week, A-Rod is angling to get into the trading card world. We're going to talk about that. We're going to be talking about shows coming up. Big shows, obviously the National in a couple of weeks. And MLB All-Star Week was this week. So, guys, how we doing? Dan, what's going on? You were just fresh off a trip from Denver. How was the trip?
I'm back. I mean, it was... You know, I wish it was actually longer. I wish I would have stayed longer. I had a great time. Downtown Denver is an amazing spot.
If you're in,
super underrated. That stadium is beautiful. I'd love to go there. Actually, I was looking at the Giants schedule. I'm like, I'm gonna go see the Giants in Coors Field before the end of the year. I need to go back. If you're into like good beer, good food, good vibes, it's a good spot.
I'm gonna be honest. Not kind of off topic here, but has it relating to
already?
The Colorado. Yeah. I have been kind of like, because we have a couple friends that actually stay down in Colorado too, and they're saying right now, like, look, Colorado is one of the locations you could probably look into for as far as like investment properties. So that's going back to what you were saying, there's a lot of really nice areas there and good place to live. So it might be CC right there once a year or something.
Sweet.
Nice. We're making moves to the Rocky Mountains.
We're
already
going.
Because house prices around here ain't affordable, so you know, we gotta buy elsewhere.
I actually now we're gonna talk about investment property. So we're done talking about sports cards. But
Special Property Brothers edition.
Yeah, right now. Raleigh, North Carolina. Durham, North Carolina.
Yes.
Hot. The next I remember 5, 6, maybe 7 years ago people were talking about Austin, Texas. I think it's kind of...
That's over now.
It's over now.
Everybody's in
it's
Austin.
Every, yeah, everybody's there. But yeah, Denver and the suburbs of Denver, for sure.
Yeah.
The only drawback I have of Denver is flying into Denver. The Denver airport's about 45 minutes away from Denver.
It's like...
And there ain't anything around there.
Like, you think SFO in the Bay Area is kind of far from the big spots? Like, that one's like... off in the middle of nowhere, and also it might be cursed. I don't know. Just if you guys want to look into some weird stuff, just look up Denver Airport Illuminati.
I've heard that they got some weird murals and stuff like that, and supposedly it was like it was like an underground bunker or something. I don't know,
all verifiably no, wow, it's not true.
But overall, I guess we're gonna talk about the National right now. That's the first slide I have, so
that's right. The National is 2 weeks away.
Here we go.
Good transition.
Talk about both of these things because you were at the show in Denver last week, which in a way is kind of like it's the first show in a long time during this weird year that we've had. So the shows are back. We had a big one in Dallas a couple months ago, but you and Doug, Dan, were at the show in Denver. Kind of a warm up for what you're going to expect in the National. What was it like out there? And it kind of was like sort of that same sort of like big environment, because not only you had the show, you had All-Star Weekend with baseball going on. So there was sort of, it was kind of, I'm sure, probably a nice warm up to what to expect when you go to Chicago in a couple weeks.
Yeah, if the National is going to be anything like what the Denver show was, and the amount of cards and the high dollar amount of cards that I was seeing was insane. Like, I mean, you're going up to cases and you're seeing like $50,000 cards, $100,000 cards, vintage stuff, modern stuff, like super rare modern stuff. You know what I did not see a lot of, and I was actually looking for you, C-Rad?
MJ.
Jordan. I know we don't talk about the dip, but has the dip prevented people from even like putting the Jordans out at card shows, because they're like, I'm not going to sell it anywhere near the comps are right now?
That's absolutely true, because you know, I've been paying attention to them online, and I've noticed that there's significantly less than there was like a month ago.
Yeah,
like at least once or every other day there would be one ending, but now it's like one a week that's ending.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And yeah, getting back to the Denver show, I got to give a shout out to Mike and John for putting on an absolutely amazing show. I don't do a lot of the show circuits, so I can't really be like the judge of like the end all be all of what the greatest card show is. I do go to the National, and you can't really compare any like card show to the National, because the National is the big one. But I have been to the TriStar show, and the TriStar show in the Bay Area is a pretty big one.
Yeah,
the Denver show, I felt ran circles around the TriStar show. So wow. If you've ever been to the TriStar show,
yeah, I've been there.
This one was just in the way of like the amount of, there was actually sealed wax there too, and a fair amount of it, and some really good stuff. Some 2017 NT, some 2017 Prism, 2017 Prism first off the line.
God.
Some crazy, crazy stuff. So yeah, it was amazing. Shout out to those guys. They killed it. I will absolutely be back to Denver. I think they're thinking about doing one. They said October and then maybe April in the springtime. But I definitely going back. I suggest everybody to go back and check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you look at the slides here, a couple of highlights, obviously. This was actually courtesy of Doug.
Is that one?
Some of the photos, that Luca collection, if you guys are watching at home. Just an incredible collection of, like, all Luca cards. Maybe instead of the getting luring people in with the MJ cards, we've moved on and now luring people in with the Luca collections. I don't know. And I know I did hear that there was one gigantic card added to the collection. I say gigantic. No, you know what? No, it was a huge card added to the collection. Maybe to the cherry on top of the collection here at Mojo Break. Did I hear correctly that there was a brand new Sean Mannion card that was acquired from this show?
It's a holy grail. I mean, I'm stoked. No, it's lies. Actually, it's right here. I don't even know if you can
that
see it.
That makes it all worthwhile.
It is
on full display.
It's making its hype debut. You could sit there and talk about exquisite LeBrons, and you could talk about Jordan, and you could talk about Luka. Scrubs compared to Sean Mannion. And I got the one of one Super Fractor.
I mean, it doesn't get any bigger unless they made a. Did they make a Super Auto? I'm assuming they did.
I think they did, but we're in the parallel era. We're not in the autograph era. That's the old man's game. You know that. So, shout out to John and that Sean Mannion.
Yeah,
the creme de la creme of our Sean Mannion collection.
That's right. That is now number one. The other thing that I think we wanted to keep an eye on was, as you know, we're one to talk, as we're expanding a media brand here at Mojo Break, but that at the Dallas show, especially, just the flood of like videos and content from, you know, new blood in the hobby, old blood that's getting into, you know, putting out that content and that video footage in the hobby. Did you guys get a sense of that in Denver?
Oh yeah,
or maybe
there.
That
I mean,
just wait until the National.
No, there was media crews out there for sure.
Okay,
you had legit like media crews who were like doing stories on the card show. So again, small sample size to what we're gonna expect at Chicago.
Oh baby,
I don't even. I mean, we're talking like National coverage. I mean, we should probably have ESPN will probably be there.
100%.
You got to expect like Fox will probably be there. I mean, CNN, every news outlet that you can think of is probably going to be represented. The aisles are going to be packed with just film crews, like just gonna be boom mics and everything. You're going to be like trying to figure out how to navigate through it. So
let alone all the you know, just content creators now within the community.
Yeah, it's
like with their own camera people.
Believe me, if you
lighting.
Don't go to the National and you just go on YouTube, you're going to feel like you went to the National.
Yeah. It's going to be that if you're on Snapchat, the Instagram Live things, like people are just going to be constantly probably live at the show. So you'll be able to catch, you could get a pretty good idea of what the show's like just
if
you're on Instagram.
YouTube, Twitch. I mean, every live streaming platform, I would say, every day at the National, pretty much all day long, you're going to be able to tune in and see what's going down.
Yeah.
It's going to be absolutely incredible. And, of course, again, Mojo Break is going to be there at the National. If you're going, make sure to visit the guys. Doug, Dan, and C-Rab will be there at the National. Check out the Mojo Break booth. There's going to be free breaks and a ton of great stuff. More surprises on the way as well. You know, might be some big names walking around.
T-shirts?
Representing the Mojo Break name. T-shirts. Who doesn't love a good free tee? We'll see. Don't want to.
Hope so. No, I'm confident that it's going to be. They're going to be there in hand.
Yeah. All will work out. It always works itself out.
We do have hats. We have hats right now in shop. We got them in hand. So hats.
Well, I'll always take a free hat over a free shirt.
Yeah.
I might be the vast minority in that. So. You know, I'm just trying to.
Yeah, I'm a shirt guy. I'm not a hat guy.
Yeah, fair enough. Most people are. So, as I mentioned, big weekend in Denver, obviously, with the card show, which coincided perfectly with MLB All-Star Week. We'll talk a little bit about that before we talk about some of the big news in the industry that I'm sure is going to affect the National coming up as well. But MLB All-Star Week was this weekend in Denver. Great events on Monday with the Home Run Derby. Fun game yesterday with Vlad Guerrero with the big home run, Shohei Ohtani. I just think it's an exciting time for baseball. I know that, like, the rookies right now are not performing, I think, as we expected. There was so much hype going into the season for baseball collectors that what an incredible rookie class and really nothing to speak of when it comes to that. But all of these other guys that I think guys have been following for years, Tatis, Guerrero, Ohtani, were the guys who were on full display over the weekend. What do you guys think? What are your takeaways? Is there anybody that you think let's put it this way. If you're holding on to a guy like Tatis, Guerrero, and Ohtani, are you, after what had happened over the last few days, are you ready to, like, say, okay, I got to get out while the going's hot and flip these guys right now if I'm holding on to their cards?
Man, I think I'm holding. I'm sitting here thinking, I was watching a Home Run Derby and just trying to digest. Like, I've been a baseball fan my whole life, and I can't remember a time when you had a core of young players that were performing at this type of level at the age that they're at. Like, I mean, and there's a couple of them that weren't even there. Like Luis Robert. If he didn't get hurt, he probably would have been there.
Yep.
Eloy Jimenez. If he didn't get hurt, he's probably there.
I didn't even mention Juan Soto, who was kind of a late addition to the roster and the Home Run Derby, and he put on a fantastic performance with Shohei Ohtani.
I mean, we might be at the start of a real just golden era of baseball. And the Home Run Derby was probably one of the most exciting home run derbies I've ever seen. And there was not, I'm a homer, there wasn't even a giant involved. There never is. But Pete Alonso, I mean, they should have the Home Run Derby in Colorado every year.
Every
year they should just be like, this is the home of the Home Run Derby. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was 480-foot home runs, 500-foot home runs. It was insane. Pete Alonso, probably the best home run derby participant I've ever seen. But what I really loved was the battle between Soto and Ohtani. Mm-hmm. And it went into what, like two overtimes in the first round? I mean, it was insane.
Dan, are you happy? Because, you know, we talked about the home run derby and the effects possibly, you know, on Ohtani moving forward with the rest of the season. Like, are you happy that he got out in the first round?
It might end up benefiting him in the long.
No, because how many swings did he have in that first round?
He said he got tired too.
He looked tired, exhausted. And he also, like, I know he hits for power. I get that, but I don't know if that's his swing. And he looked like he started off and he was struggling a little bit. Then he looked like he was kind of hurting his shoulder. And at that point, I was like, it's just go in the dugout. Like, you had a good run. Stop doing it. Like, he is right now. And MLB was kind of behind it, and they were marketing the heck out of him. But he could be the face of baseball right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that he's the most popular guy. Like, people who don't talk about baseball are talking about Shohei Ohtani. Who haven't watched in years are now curious about the sport because of what this guy's doing. I think in a way it was actually good for him, for like his his hobby standing right now, his standing in the hobby, that maybe that he didn't make a huge splash, or you know, if he went out and like struck out the side and had a home run in the All-Star game, obviously people would be going crazy. But yeah, maybe just kind of be patient with him, and the best is yet to come with him still. I think there's not maybe that worry that there's going to be that second half slump after like a 40 home run performance in the home run derby.
He did get the win. He got the
100 mile per hour fastball, like the fastest pitch he's thrown all season was in that first inning, which is wild.
Okay, that's good. At least he didn't hit it. He didn't hurt his shoulder. No. I guess that's
didn't hurt his shoulder. He's not injured. He was fun. It was exciting. And yeah, all the best stars were on display. I do feel like it's funny that there was all of this hype about Ohtani, and then also like Tatis. There was a lot of hype surrounding him that I feel like we just forgot about the 22-year-old son of a Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah.
And then he goes out and hits a 407-foot bomb in that game. And, yeah, he's another guy that I think that maybe wakes a lot of people up. Not that his value was going down at all. Like, it was going nothing but up for cards.
But they're, like, nothing compared to, like, some of these other younger guys, right?
No. Not quite yet. But I think that after that performance, and then I think people have to now look at, like, oh, wait a minute. He's leading the league in average. He's leading the league in on base. He's leading the league in RBIs. Like, yeah, he's not Shohei Ohtani, but like he's literally doing everything else you can as an offensive player. So maybe a little more light shine on him. So it was a really, really fun weekend, a great couple of days for baseball. And there was also a big event on Sunday night. I kind of feel like I have to admit that maybe I was a little wrong. I feel like for the last year I've been saying, hey, man, the MLB draft is going to be All-Star weekend. It's going to be the biggest draft ever. Everyone's going to be talking about it for the first time. There's going to be a draft combine. I just want to ask both of you straight up. Do you know who the number one pick in the MLB draft was on Sunday night?
No, sir.
you know, at my hotel that I was in, they had a banner saying that there was going to be an MLB draft.
Okay.
I had to look at Doug and go, is that going to be while we're here?
So, I'm here to say I'm going to eat crow.
It wasn't lighter because I think he was second, right?
He was second.
So
Henry Davis went number one.
Catcher, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
So yeah, like I said, I'm gonna eat crow a little bit and say yeah, it wasn't the draft of the century like I was expecting it to be. Maybe part of that is the fact that there was an NBA Finals game on Sunday night and a lot of people were as they should, paying more attention to that. But for us as collectors in the hobby, this was obviously a big moment for baseball collectors, as Bowman Draft will be coming out in a couple months, and it's our first look at a lot of these guys. Mm-hmm. So I did just want to focus on a few guys. Henry Davis is that number one pick going to Pittsburgh, bit of a surprise pick. The catcher, I think he was like a top five prospect, really, really great hitting catcher, but he's going to Pittsburgh. But I think obviously the two names to focus on, we've been talking about them. Jack Leiter goes to the Texas Rangers. Kumar Rocker goes to the New York Mets. Both Vanderbilt starting pitchers, star pitchers. Do you guys think that these two guys, even though they're pitchers, can be basically the faces of the next Bowman set coming out? When it's their first Bowman, are these going to be the two guys that people are going to talk to, despite the fact that they're pitchers?
Knowing how Tops will do this, I actually don't think they'll put both Vanderbilt guys in the same release. I don't think they'll both be in draft.
Probably gonna split.
They'll probably hold out Leiter for 2022 Bowman, if I had to guess. But I think it's going to be huge. But there was also, like, didn't the Red Sox draft number fourth? They drafted a shortstop.
Yeah, Marcelo Mayer, who by a lot of accounts was actually the best prospect in this draft. I think there was scouting comparison saying, like, he's going to hit like Corey Seager and field like Brandon Crawford. That's pretty damn good. And he's going to play for the Boston Red Sox, which I think the Red Sox were thinking, hey, we're in a top five spot. We're going to get a great player regardless. But to end up with arguably the best player in the entire draft, he could end up being, he's probably going to end up being the star and the guy that I think collectors are going to flock to almost immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Bowman draft, I think 2022 Bowman, I think they're going to do amazing. There's always going to be one of these prospects that kind of goes under the radar that in 3-4 years we're going to be like, that's what's driving the product. That's why the product is drying up, is because everybody's chasing somebody that nobody was chasing when the product first came out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't think you're going to eat crow. I think you're going to look back on it and go, this was a really, really good draft.
Thank you. I needed that. I need a little bit of an ego boost.
And Rocker going to New York.
That's the best thing that could have happened to him.
And I don't know why he fell. I have a feeling it had to do with money.
Well, and I think that you saw the one thing that I think was interesting about this draft. It was the first time that you saw the results of the College World Series, I think, affect where guys got picked. I think Rocker, if this was before the College World Series, I think he's a consensus top five pick. Like, it's not even a question. But he had some ups and downs down the stretch, so I think that maybe pushed him a little bit. Obviously, there's the signing bonus as well. I think he's expecting beyond even the signing bonus that he slotted at for that 10th pick with the Mets. Mm-hmm. I'm just happy he didn't end up going to Colorado. I think I was watching, and he was sitting there at 7th going, oh, God, don't let him go to Colorado. Like, that's just an absolute curse for any good, you know, up-and-coming pitcher. So good for him to go to New York. I think that, and again, I know, I see it in the chat, that pitchers are just not big in the hobby, but I really think if there are guys who can buck the trend, it is these two guys. I know Strasburg is really the last guy.
Look what DeGrom's going for now.
Right.
Like, go through and look and see what, like, DeGrom's, like, first Bowman are going for and what his rookie's going for. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it doesn't happen all the time, but I think this may be the one year where there's an exception. Obviously, the Red Sox getting a huge shortstop helps as well. There's a ton of great shortstops, I think, just before we move on to mention as well. Khalil Watson, who was, by a lot of accounts, the number one pick in this draft, fell all the way to 16th. I think thanks to signability and whatnot, he ends up going to the Marlins. Washington Nationals get Brady House, who was also a consensus, like, top five, top 10 guy, ends up going 11th. So a lot of really exciting young position players here as well. Like, if you're looking to collect shortstops, which right now, I mean, there's about as good a time if you're collecting shortstops for baseball fans with Tatis and the like. There were three guys who could be that next generation of guys. So I think there's still going to be a lot of really, really exciting players to collect over the next year as Bowman comes out. But let's move on to some of the business of the hobby. Lots of deals are going down. And I feel like, of course, as we're gearing up towards the National, I feel like we're going to see a little bit more of this. And the biggest one at the moment, Alex Rodriguez, is right in the middle of it all. So the details are this. A-Rod has an SPAC, an investment firm, basically, that he's partnered with. And they are in talks to acquire or to merge with Panini.
Panini.
A huge deal is in the makings. We've been kind of teasing this, I think, for the last few months. Ever since the Topps deal happened, ever since Topps went public, there has been that feeling of, like, Panini's next. Panini's kind of, I think Panini obviously was waiting maybe to see what Topps was valued at, to think, okay, whatever they're valued at, we got to top that because we got more. We're Panini. And we're hearing right now $3 billion.
Minimum. Minimum. $3
billion.
Yeah. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Who says there's a dip right now? Sorry, I know we were supposed to talk about it, but, like, seeing like this and seeing some of the other stories that have come out, the PSA and Golden, you know, the Collector's Universe buying Golden and buying PSA and buying all of these, you know, entities within this world, like, any fear about, like, things are going down, to me, like, just look at what's happening in front of you. Things have never been healthier, and it's only going to get bigger and bigger. What do you guys think?
I mean, obviously, it's a lot of money, man.
It's a lot of money. $3 billion is a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the top sale again?
Top sold at, I've got it in my notes here, I think it was $1.3 billion is what they were valued when they went public.
And that was high.
It was very high.
That was high.
Yeah.
So, we actually talked about this. Like, as soon as that happened, we're like, well, now the bar has been kind of set if Panini wants to go on the market.
Right.
And been like, start at $2 billion, but now Panini's like, we're starting at $3 billion.
Now, and I'm not a business major or anything, but like my understanding is that the value here is what the value of the merger means, not necessarily the sole value of Panini. Okay. But even still, I think that still probably puts Panini at or just above the valuation of Topps in this deal. There, it would be the crown jewel of this investment group with A-Rod. A-Rod, by the way, who I believe, didn't he just buy a piece of the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Timberwolves.
As well? Yeah, he is. I think he saw Derek Jeter, what he's doing in Miami, and I think there's always that inferiority complex with Jeter, and he's like, well, what can I do to top him? I'm not only going to buy a pro sports team, I'm going to buy a trading card company as well.
And I'm going to make it to the Hall of Fame, even though I did steroids.
And I'm going to still make it first ballot Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Tough, Barry.
So what does there's been so many acquisitions over the last couple of weeks, that last couple of months, that have really shaken up the industry. This, I feel like, is kind of the culmination of it all, like a bombshell moment.
Yep.
If you would have, like, because we always, this is something that we always would kick the tires on and talk about it. Like, what company is going to sell first? And we would always be like, well,
Upper Deck.
Someone's going to buy Upper Deck, right? They got to be the first to go. They may be the last one standing that did not get bought out by somebody else.
Well, Brian Graham would be like, hold on now.
wait a second. But so that, man, like, what a time. What a time to be a manufacturer in the sports card industry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So what do you, like, I know we kind of talked about it before the show happened, but if this deal does go through, what does that mean for baseball cards?
I think the first thing you would jump to is that, being a former baseball player, A-Rod, he's going to be like, I want the baseball license. I either want Panini to be able to share it, but I can't see A-Rod putting out Panini product that doesn't have MLB logos on it. I think he'd be able to deal with that if it was the NBA or, you know, something like that. But I think him being a former baseball player and a future Hall of Famer, he is going to want logos. And he is going to want to have Derek Jeter cards. And the negotiation with the Players Association could be completely different now when you have a former ball player who is involved.
Yeah, I think ideally that's what Panini would like, is that bringing in A-Rod is sort of that muscle to maybe try to persuade MLB to either share the license or to have Topps share the license, or like take the license entirely from Topps. My guess is I bet you that it'll be more like the Upper Deck situation, where they are going to sign really big names from baseball. Mike Trout's already got the Topps contract, but like, imagine they make this deal and suddenly you hear Fernando Tatis is going to be an exclusive Panini athlete.
Okay. Yeah. And
that sort of thing. I think that is maybe the more likely scenario to begin with. I think, Sierra, you were talking about it. There is some allegiance, I think, with Topps and MLB of, like, you know, they are the brand when it comes to Topps. They're the biggest brand.
They've been serving baseball collectors since
forever.
The beginning of time.
Yeah. Right. I mean, they are essentially Coca-Cola of the baseball card industry. I mean, you think of I've always said like, Topps is one of those iconic American brands, like Coca-Cola, like Fender, like Gibson. Even if you're not a musician, you know, what you look at the Fender logo and you know that is a guitar.
Yes.
So I put Topps up there. So I mean, it would be devastating to see Topps not be able to produce a baseball card with logos on it.
But you have to, as a baseball collector, dude, you have to not start to accept it, but with this being on the table, it's a real possibility that that may eventually happen, where we live in a world without Topps baseball cards.
I get it. And again, not taking anything away from Panini either, because I would love to see a National Treasures or an Immaculate Baseball with logos on it. I think there's some iconic designs, even though those designs haven't been around forever. I mean, it's not like Finest and, you know, flagship and stuff like that. But those with logos on it, those incredible lines would be incredible.
Yeah, that's the part of me that's like, as a fan of baseball growing up with Topps cards, like, I don't want that to go, but you're right. Those Panini products, some of the, especially the high end products, to be able to see actual MLB licensing on that would just there's very little. I think that there's a few products in the Topps can compete with that, but I think Panini just does those really high end ones so well, and it would be incredible to see those with MLB logos. But man, this, there is also like a fear here that and it's, it kind of goes along with a lot of the mergers going on that we're kind of seeing. I think we talked about maybe a couple weeks ago off air, Dan, that you've seen in the last like 10, 15 years, especially in entertainment, where you're seeing 15 entertainment companies become 8 entertainment companies. And it just kind of keeps like it feels like it just keeps shrinking and shrinking. And now we're at the point where, now let's say Panini does this, and then Panini eventually buys the MLB license, and then Topps is left with, you know, Star Wars, WWE, and a few other interesting brands, but like nothing to be able to compete with the likes of Panini. And like, suddenly we're going from, I would not be shocked if we're living in a world where there's like maybe 2 sports card brands that really have weight in this game. And to me, that's not something I think that's good for this hobby, really. Is it would be, I think there's already problems with maybe people getting priced out, and I think it would only get worse if a company were to just suck everything up and be the only home for all of these sports and all these brands.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. In any business, right, your competition basically makes you have to be better at what you do. If that's like, that can go from anything. I can go from like the design team. If one card manufacturer is the only one producing cards, well, their design team isn't going to get pushed by another competitor to think outside the box and maybe try something different and maybe, you know, do something special. That competition breeds an overall better product, because you are going to be held accountable by your competition. So, competition's definitely a good thing. It's a good thing. It's a good thing for everybody. But it's really good for the end user, the consumer, the collector.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's crazy to think that, you know, like for years now, ever since Panini took the NFL license exclusively, took the NBA license exclusively for years. And so even till to this day, people are like, man, I wish we could go back to the times when we had multiple, you know, manufacturers making these with these licenses. And now we're staring at something that may potentially, like you guys have just been talking about the last few minutes, where it's like one company producing all of it. You know what I'm saying? That's crazy to think about.
I think it's a little dangerous. We're like kind of crossing into some dangerous waters right now with this, where it's both, like I said, very exciting because it's showing that the hobby is really healthy right now. People are interested in it. Money is flowing in still. But, you know, 5 years from now, are we going to be only ripping open from one product, like, or one brand, I should say? That does get a little dangerous. I think I've seen some sentiment in the chat. I think the ideal scenario here is that maybe this brings a scenario where MLB is a shared product with Panini.
That would be the most ideal situation.
That would be ideal for everybody involved, and it would be incredibly exciting to see a lot of those Panini products with the MLB license.
It's a fine line, though, because we can go back to, you know, the late 80s where there was 20, 30 different baseball card trading companies that all had license. So and that's the junk wax era.
I think we talked about it plenty of times on the show too, where the leagues themselves would rather deal with just one entity.
Well, I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, if you're a league, wouldn't you just have to talk and work out deals with one company rather than like work out deals with multiple companies, and then those companies are like, well, we think you're giving a better deal to the other company, and then you just got to go back and forth rather than just like, hey, give us X amount of dollars and you have the exclusive rights. We have to deal with one company and that's it. And I mean, I also think that it's going to completely change too, because I think the leagues themselves are like, trading cards were just a small little sliver of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're looking at it and they're like, it's a lot bigger than we thought it was.
Yeah.
Maybe right. We should have multiple manufacturers and multiple
That's true.
License, because
I didn't even think about that.
You know, instead of getting, you know, 50 million from one, we can get maybe 35 million from both.
Well, to that point, I think the fact that, like, it's not trading cards, but with NFTs, that MLB could have just teamed with Topps and done the easy thing, but they're teaming with an entirely different company. I saw they actually had an advertisement in the middle of the All-Star game about some, like, Dodgers NFTs that are now on sale, I think, with Candy is the company.
Yeah, I changed channel.
I'm out. So I think that kind of, to your guys' point, that they're kind of saying we need to sort of, piece this out a little bit, that it doesn't need to all be through Topps NFT thing as well. We can do it to other stuff. So it'll be very interesting to see. By the way, almost a completely random thought that just went through my head. It's just interesting how all of these deals that A-Rod is making almost directly coincided with the ending of his engagement with J-Lo. Like, I've heard of retail therapy before, but like this is like, this is like retail therapy for billionaires. Like, oh man, I gotta feel better. I'm gonna go buy a basketball team. I'm gonna go buy the biggest trading card company in the world. I just need to feel better about myself.
Maybe it was gonna happen before and it was like the beginning of the end of the relationship.
Yeah, maybe J-Lo was the one who said, do you really want to buy the Minnesota Timberwolves?
You don't want to buy the Timberwolves?
Right. You could buy...
want to buy the Lakers, maybe?
Like, something else. Like, you could buy the Heat, stay in Miami.
I know, Miami.
It's like, I want to... think about buying panini. She's like, what do you need a sandwich shop for?
The Wahlbergs have that market cornered already, all right? Anyway, another big acquisition that happened, a little bit off of the path, but it's definitely staying in the collectible quarter here. Mentioned a little bit that Collectors Universe has been really staking their claim in the hobby over the last year. That's the group that's led by Steve Cohen, a multi-billionaire who's, for sports fans, you know him as the owner now of the New York Mets. But Collectors Universe just made another big acquisition. They acquired Golden, or I think at least part of Golden, about a week ago. Already PSA as well, the parent company for PSA. Now they have bought WATA. WATA, WATA Games. They are a video game grading company. And if that name sounds familiar over the last week, you might have seen that on Friday, the biggest graded video game sale of all time happened. A copy of Super Mario 64 that I believe was graded a 9.8 sold for $1.56 million. Pretty incredible. And I think like 2 days earlier, a copy of The Legend of Zelda for the NES sold for $870,000. So literally like 2 days later, that Mario game broke the record. Where are we standing on video game grading right now? I know comic books grading has been a thing for a long time. But I guess I'm still having a hard time wrapping my head around the idea of grading video games, something that... as a child, I just reflexively, the moment I got it, would just rip it to shreds and get the cartridge out the moment I had it. So it's weird for me to think that there are these mint copies.
Never see the box again.
Right, never again.
I don't need the box.
Exactly. I actually am on the side also a video game collector. I don't really buy graded games per se, but I know that it's been not as long as graded cards have been, but I think even as early, I remember hearing about graded games even like in the 2000s, maybe like late 90s too, growing up. But specifically this sale, when I heard about it, it really blew my mind, because I was like, Super Mario 64 the Nintendo 64 is a fairly collectible system among game collectors, but
like mid 90s,
1996,
mid 90s, right?
That's the exactly one nearest and dearest to my heart for sure. The N64.
This game is neither that rare. Those millions of copies produced of this, and
didn't you get that game when you bought the console?
I want to say there was definitely a bundle where you could get Super Mario 64 with it.
Yeah.
But it was the original NES 2 that came with the Mario.
Which that might make it, that might be the reason why it's went for so much, because copies that are in that good of condition, yeah, because it came with the system, are probably really, really hard to come by.
I don't know if, man, I don't, if you got the bundle deal, did it actually, did you get the box?
Yeah.
Was,
yeah,
was the game, was the, or the, sure, was the game just in there? Like, got, just a cartridge.
I think you got the box.
I think you got the box. I think you got the box.
I mean, and I get it. It is a 9.8, which I'm going to assume that it's probably a low pop, maybe pop one or two, right, if any. But 1.56 million for Super Mario 64, it blew my mind as a game collector, because it's like, even if you have a mint condition copy of this, like non-graded, like it, it's nothing near that amount. So there's a huge gap between, like, what we would say with a raw card. I mean, there's not as huge of a gap between a raw card necessarily and a PSA 10, right? If it's, like, for certain cards or...
Yeah, I mean, this is basically...
It really... I mean, you got to figure that, like, if we're going to throw the pop out there, this has to be the only one.
It has to be the only
one. The only one. It has to be the only one.
It has to be.
That's crazy.
I mean, I think we've talked about the game, the cartridge grading before, and I get it, but again, like, you don't want to have too many, you know, silver sodas and be like, I really want to play that game and go through nostalgia and just crack the case.
Because you can buy that game just if you want to play it for like, true, $20 off of eBay, bro.
Yeah, but you can't.
Or, you know,
but
whatever,
I mean, if you had money to burn, really, you could basically be like, I'm gonna open the $1.56 million one.
Man.
And what are you gonna do about it?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I'm not. This is like, I do collect. Like I said, I do collect video games, and I do collect sealed video games too. I just never got into the whole grading aspect, right, of it. Just you know, because I understand. Like for me, like as a collector, a physical collection is important to me still. Like I don't want everything digital, even though I have been buying more games digitally recently. I still do like to collect physical, but this is crazy. And you know what else is crazy? I was watching a video. This has to do with grading too. I guess people are now starting to getting into VHS grading.
I was gonna say, are we gonna get it like DVDs? Like
DVDs are about to be
new,
worth something.
Old stock, like, yeah, sealed DVDs.
Yeah.
Well, like if you look up too, like I mean, it's everything old now. It's like if you find like vintage T-shirts that were like, you know, like some ratty T-shirt from like a concert in the 90s. It's worth like $75. It's like, you know, it's the same sort of idea. You mentioned the VHS. Did you guys see that trend like a few years ago, maybe 5-10 years ago, where it was specifically the Disney clamshell VHS tapes?
Yeah. Yep.
Where there was articles going around that claimed these are now worth $10,000 each.
No. No.
Yeah.
So
garbage I'd ever heard of.
Yeah. I brought that up just to say that because the guy that was doing the video. Yeah. He's a YouTuber named Films at Home. He's a really good movie reviewer for home videos. But he was basically saying that it's basically all bogus and a scam because those VHSs were produced so much. It was like the junk Arrowax cards in a way,
yep,
because they made so much of those. They made so many of those Disney shell clams. Like there's no way that they will ever be worth, right? And then films are something where they can just keep reproducing even better on different mediums, right? It's not like a video game where they can't make that same cartridge ever again,
true,
right? Necessarily. Or cards where they're not going to reproduce the Jordan rookie and it's ever going to be worth the same as the real Jordan rookies, right? So but VHS is like it's a movie that's they keep re-releasing movies all the time in better quality and the new whatever the newest medium is. So like people grading companies are charging like $50 to grade VHS. And then they're like, oh, you can probably double your money, but it's like, no, you probably can't.
Well, I mean, we're getting, I mean, it's, history is definitely repeating itself. Like it, so vinyl records, huge market.
Oh, yeah.
Huge.
No, geez, vinyls is different.
Huge market, and I get it. Like vinyl sounds a million times better than an MP3 or even CDs. CDs like are a little too digital, a little too processed. MP3s are compressed. I can't, like, I could tell the difference, but vinyl is amazing. Yeah. Vinyl is amazing. But are we going to get to a point
people
where
vinyls.
Cassettes are coming back. No. People are like looking for new old stock cassettes, and they want to listen to them because they the way they sound, analog tape. Are we going to get to a point where it's like VHS? Like, are we going to go back to like movie stores, like VHS, like rental shops where people no. like I had a I have a buddy who was like telling me 5 years ago, he's like, I'm going to open up a VHS rental store, like like basically a mom and pop Blockbuster, because VHSs are going to come back and people are going to want to watch VHSs like they listen to vinyl.
No,
I like the vinyl idea better.
Because vinyl, you get it because you're right, the sound quality is better. Whereas VHS, no, the picture quality but if it's, is objectively but if it's, worse. If it's,
if it, but the thing is if it's trendy, sure. people will literally buy into the fact that they're like, well, man, I think it looks better.
But like, I
nope.
can
because they're going to go out and they're going to get an old console tube TV.
I have them.
They're going to be like,
I have them.
I got the full retro 1984 setup here, and we're going to watch E.T. on my tube TV. Hey, my VHS.
Get your Reese's Pieces ready.
I'm telling you, there's people like that, but there's not enough people like that. I mean, there's people that enjoy that retro
man.
Stuff.
Man,
I have three tube TVs myself for retro video games specifically, but not for VHSs.
I'm telling you, man.
I need my movies in 4K, HDR.
Yep.
Just until
Dolby Atmos.
Just until it gets super, super hip and everybody's going out and reproducing and buying VHS tapes.
But vinyl, what we just keep saying, vinyl, you get the best sound. You get, you know, and you can hook it up to an amazing, you know, whatever your sound system is and get the full effect of it. Where a VHS, you try to play that VHS, like, first of all, nobody's going out and buying tube TVs. That's number one, because they're heavy as crap, and nobody wants to carry that around. You try playing
TV repairmen are going to come back. That's going to be an industry. Get in now.
With it, the reboot of underrated dark comedy classic, The Cable Guy as well. It's all coming back, baby.
Dude, try playing a VHS tape on your brand new 4K TV and see what it tells me.
That's why
it'll explode. Your TV will blow
that's
up.
That's why you need to get an old, like, RCA tube TV, man.
Oh man.
It takes a handful of people to make this movement. In 10 years, if we're sitting here going back and we're like, man, I am looking for new old stock VHS tapes because that's the only way I watch movies now. Oh, or that's the only way Disney puts out movies now because they only put them out on VHS.
Yeah. Now, I think from the standpoint of, and this goes into not just movies, but like the video game stuff, cards as well. Like, as we move more towards an all digital world, an all digital collecting world, even that's why stuff like a Super Mario 64, you know, cartridge goes for $1.5 million. Why people might in 10 years be clamoring to just watch a video on a VHS and hearing the whirring of the rewind as they, it just gives you that warm feeling. I know, like, I went and saw a movie like on a film projector like a few years ago, and to hear the actual film reel start up and crank up, it was awesome. Like, it gave me like chills on the back of my neck.
I hated loading up movies on those things, by the way, because I used to work at the movie theater.
Oh, on the actual projector. Yes. Yeah, it's a pain in the ass.
Pulling the film through that machine was a pain in the butt, dude.
I could see that one coming back and people being like, I actually want
to
watch it on
the
film
reel. I'd like to own one for my own house and have a theater room, you know what I mean? I'd like to run that, but like, it wasn't fun as a
job. Just go out and get a tube TV and a VHS.
So you
just,
know what? Maybe
just be ahead of
ahead
of the trend, man.
Just get any physical media.
I mean, we're opening up, like, we're going to open up Mojo Video.
Mojo Video. Yeah, we're going to literally look like Blockbuster, except it's just going to say Mojo Break across in
it's
going to
be more mom and pop independent is what I'm going
for. Fair enough. Yeah. I want to have
the little like circular tags that you got to bring up to the counter.
And yes, we will have a section in the back where you have to go through a bead door as well.
Absolutely. I worked in an independent.
And, and the behind the beads is going to be
I can't tell you what's behind the beads.
No. That car company that does like the what's that name of those cards?
Benchwarmers.
That's what you'll find behind the beads, baby. Yes.
Those cards that you pick up on the street.
Benchwarmers.
Like those cards in Vegas.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know
they don't.
Benchwarmers.
You know they don't do that as much. I think they've cracked down in Vegas.
Because it's for families now. It's a family.
Well, they went digital with it, probably. I'm assuming.
I mean,
but
I remember when I first would go to Vegas, like they would run you down.
Yeah.
They'd chase you down. You're like sprinting down Las Vegas Boulevard trying to get away from these people. Like, get back here, I got some flyers for you.
Well, while we're on this nostalgia kick, let's wrap things up. Let's play a little guess that price. We're gonna stick with the video game theme. I got fascinated by video game prices.
$8.
Yep. So I thought this would be interesting. Let's take a look at just three games.
Okay.
Take a look. By the way, before we do go, I do have to mention our winner for last week, Paul Tokar. You won our select football giveaway. Make sure to go on mojobreak.com and go to the contact us form. Fill that out with your information, and we will send you your prize of select football.
Select football hanger, right?
Yes, two select football hangers. Great prize. So congratulations, Paul.
Congrats.
And we will send that to you as soon as we can. So let's play Guess That Price. Game, graded video game edition. First up, this is, they're all WADA, by the way. This is a Tetris, the original Tetris for Game Boy.
Oh, amazing game.
Amazing game.
Good soundtrack.
Still holds up to this day. Absolutely. Maybe my favorite game. That and Mario 64, actually, might be my two favorite games.
I'd get that soundtrack on vinyl.
It's graded a 7.5.
The greatest Russian game ever made.
They also give it a letter grade, by the way.
What's that B-plus mean?
So they give it a letter grade on top of, I think the letter grade is for the seal. So you get the grade for all of how the game is itself, and then a letter grade for how is the sealing on the package. So this has a B-plus seal, 7.5 grade. And again, it's the original Game Boy version that was released in the late 80s.
7.5, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Man.
7.5. I'm seeing guesses in the chat. $400,
okay.
$399.
I got mine.
All right.
I'm gonna go first.
C-Rad, go first.
$7,500.
All right.
$12,000.
Actual price, $2,999.99. C-Rag gets the first point.
Okay, I knew it wasn't
so
that
seven,
crazy, bro.
A 7.5 might not be a great.
So Rombot's put in 1K, so Rombot got the closest in the chat. All right, next one.
I was only 10,000 off, huh?
Yeah, baby.
This is my joint right here.
Final Fantasy VII. It's an A seal. 9.6 grade, one of the most iconic games for the PlayStation.
I rented this game 3 times from Blockbuster.
I mean, you had to, one for each disc.
Yes. I could not finish it on one Blockbuster trip.
That A has to be good, right?
Yeah,
that's a really good score, I think.
This is like the original version. Like, I remember going to friends' houses, and this is the version they had back in the 90s.
Damn, 9.6, man.
It's a 9.6, and it is one of the most iconic games ever released.
Make a movie, right?
They did make a movie. I get confused. They made like a one that had nothing to do with the game, but it had the Final Fantasy name.
Oh, okay.
I remember Spirit Within. Yes,
that was the
Spirit
one that
Within.
Had nothing to do with Final Fantasy
had nothing
games.
To do with it. But it was
they
like
came out
by
with
them.
They came out with Advent Children, which was a direct sequel to Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, exactly.
And that movie sucked too.
I never saw that one. I saw the Spirits Within. Actually, at the drive-in theaters in San Jose.
Unfortunately.
Oh, the drive-in movie theater, dude. Right. Is that coming back?
It's still around. It's been around.
I know, but did it survive the pandy?
It thrived.
Thrived.
Yeah, people probably loved it.
I guess
it does make. Didn't they have like a theater that closed down that was next to it though?
Yep.
Like
yep.
The indoor theater.
I grew up literally like a 5-minute drive from there, so that was my home theater. Yeah, they had one right next to it.
Yeah, they had
Capital Century. Who's not from San Jose, I apologize for all the San Jose knowledge. Yeah, Capital Century. And then the drive-in theater.
I guess the drive-in theater thriving during the pandy in a city like San Jose with a million people. Yeah.
I mean, they were doing like Jurassic Park, E.T., Star Wars, so people liked it. It was cool. All right. What are our guesses? Final Fantasy VII.
$22,000.
$19,500.
Ooh, Dan is the winner, but he's off by 10,000 once again. 9,500 is the actual price. Oh, there's one chick of 82 grand.
There's one thing I know.
in the chat, Matthew had the closest guess of 7,800. So this is, here we go, tiebreaker.
I'm not good at this.
And this one, I threw this one in.
Oh, dude.
We know the backstory to this.
Yeah.
So
it's like the worst game ever made, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Exactly.
E.T., the extraterrestrial. This is one of the most infamous games ever made. Famously, many of these games were thrown into a garbage dump, so there are not a lot of really good versions of this game. This is graded a 9.2.
Mm. Bro, I'll tell you what. And I'm being kind of
It should be no terrible
with
game.
The score or with this price.
Yeah.
So, ready?
All right. Let's hear it. This is for all the marbles.
$1,200.
All right.
Say 50, please.
Nah, I think you won.
What did you say?
You can just say it. It's okay. What did we you won't say? Judge.
92,000.
Just a little off. C-Red is
cannot,
the winner.
There cannot be that many.
I was actually surprised by this. And I like actually that, thought this would be closer to like
score,
the 5-10.
Like a 9.2. And how old is that game?
$899.99.
So I was,
I was like 85,000
yeah,
off.
Just about almost 100 grand off.
So I was only off $300.
Only $300. Okay. Not bad.
Well, now I'm gonna get messages saying, "Hey, I got a graded ET Atari cartridge. You in the market?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well
I'm like, I already picked one up for 92,000, so I'd maybe a little bit less than that.
You better have got 90,000 copies.
I honestly thought that would go for more, but I think it being an absolutely terrible game probably won out.
Over, yeah, the fact that it's a terrible game, and but I mean 92 is not that great of a grade either, right? Yeah.
Because it's such a bad game, that's why I went so high.
That's what I thought too. It's the one game you wouldn't have the urge to open it.
Yeah, why would you want?
And actually, in video games, the better the game is, it's like the opposite of sometimes like
that's ridiculous because like all those games are probably in the garbage.
Oh, like the ETs.
Yeah, like everybody who like. Why, if somebody got that and they're just like, well, I could open it up and play it, and they're like, well, I'm not going to play it because it's a terrible game, you would think that they would just throw it away.
Yeah.
But no, it's in somebody's collection, and it's definitely not worth $92,000.
Yeah. Wada, wada, wada.
Yeah. Despite the fact that the title of that said E.T. game, great condition, wow, only $900. So the wow didn't get it. There was no wow factor on it.
Wait, it wasn't even $1,000?
Not even $1,000.
$900.
Not even $1,000. Esmeram, how much is Pong? That's a good question, actually.
I don't know how much
Pong is. We need to find that. If you can find a 9.5 Pong, got to imagine that goes for a lot.
For the Atari?
Yeah. Now, if we're talking like an actual like arcade console, well.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
But see, like these prices that we just saw, right? These are the prices that are normal to me. 1.something million for Super Mario 64 is not normal.
Crazy.
Like games don't sell for that much.
You could have literally had the Mario 64 game and the Atari ET game, and you could have asked me which one sold for $1.56 million.
Yeah,
and I would have went like the ET game.
Yeah,
because it's older. It's I mean,
but what your line of thinking is correct. It's like. Nobody really bought this crap, and everybody that did buy it threw it in the trash.
Yeah.
So there's not that many copies out there, but yeah, in video game, if a game sucks, it's not going to be sought
after. And there was a lot more N64 consoles, so there had to be way more Super Mario 64 cartridges produced.
Absolutely.
You even think.
So I would have been like, I would have bet a lot of money on that. I would have been like, there's no doubt. That it's the ET game.
The other thing, of course, that goes through my mind is you had the two biggest sales for this grading company within 3 days of each other and right before they sold, exactly.
Yeah, dude, that's something fishy about that, bro. There's no way Super Mario 64 sold for $1.5 million. There's no way, dude.
Don't say billion, dude.
Yeah, million.
I know we're throwing around the billions, but...
Like as a you know, lifelong video game collector, that does that price doesn't make any sense to
but
me.
But it does
at all.
Get your company in the media though. Yes. And it does work very well if you're about ready to sell or if you're about ready to announce a sell of your company. It's definitely good press.
Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely
yep.
is.
Does there's a
So you're calling BS on that, right?
I am.
Yeah,
I am.
You're thinking it got shielded a little bit?
I think so. I think there's a Five Guys. In the shadow, who like were listing each other's games and bidding up the price.
This is all the same people. It's the people who bought that LeBron Top Shot for like $500,000. They also bought this for $1.5 million.
The same
it's
shadowy
all,
group.
It's all the same guys all doing this. So.
Manipulating every market.
Yeah, exactly.
Make us hold the bag.
Well, we'll see how this all plays out. Maybe we'll see you guys will see some video game graded video games at the National. Maybe see A-Rod walking around talking Panini. You're gonna be excited coming up in a couple of weeks. And of course, stick around here on Mojo Break. We got great stuff all week long. More breaks are coming up right now. Brand new Topps Museum. We didn't even talk about it. Topps Museum comes out this week. So if you guys are looking to get some great baseball cards, check that out. And of course, check out MojoBreakShop.com. That is where you can find sealed wax, vintage wax, Pokemon cards, all of that over at MojoBreakShop.com, as well as our shop here in Santa Clara. And of course, make sure to like and subscribe to Mojo Break Media for more podcasts and videos on the way. For C-Rad, for Dan, I'm Cody. We'll see you next time on The Hype.
Later.